This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency, with information for business and IT professionals. This episode is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. This is episode 54 with Jim Hunton. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined by Jim Hunton. Jim, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
What we do as we start off each podcast is to let the listeners know a little bit about our guests. So, Jim, if you want to give people a bit of a background about yourself and where you come from.
Well, I'm from Phoenix, Arizona. I run a small IT company. We have three techs. We've been specialized in small to medium sized businesses, typically small business server in the past, and now we're moving beyond that to Server 2012 and Server 2012 Essentials, and we manage I think around 60 different companies under managed service contracts.
Cool. All right. So I think there's probably a very large interested audience out there that we're interested to get your feedback on our topic today. So what I've asked Jim to come on and speak about is basically around password security. So probably the biggest weakness of any system these days is the wetware on the keyboard, basically the person using poor passwords and allowing compromises of systems. But when we look at it as an overall IT management strategy, it becomes a lot more complicated because obviously you've got IT resellers who have the keys to the kingdom for a lot of their customers. How do you keep those secure? How do you manage that in light of employee turnover and things like that? So why don't you give us some background, Jim, as to your thought process and why this has become an important part or an important thinking for your business?
Well, I started out as a one-person shop, and password management, I had no security issues as far as knowing the passwords, and basically I could just memorize those passwords. But when we added a second tech, then I shortly realized that now, if we have an issue with this other second tech, what is that going to cause in our infrastructure and security for the customers? So what we did was we've been looking for a few years, and I've heard Dana Epp speak about password security and short passwords, easily hacked passwords, and then we've implemented long passwords, typically at least 14 characters long, so that way we can minimize the hacky ability for a hacker to hack a server and such, but we still didn't have the ability to protect the customer from ourselves. And in last year at SME Nation, I met a company that had a compelling story. And what they did was they explained to me how we could actually protect ourselves. So they actually have a portal where you can connect your clients through with some software and synchronize back through Active Directory, the passwords, so that you can actually set those passwords to change on a regular basis. The only fear that I had with that was you're setting all of your passwords into one place. How likely is it that you get hacked via, if they get hacked, your passwords are all gone. So then we started looking at alternatives to that as well, where we could implement a second layer of security. So we added a two-factor authentication through AuthAnvil. And with that, we've made a secure site so that way we can store our customers' passwords as well as rotate them on a regular basis and have a system where we can actually track the end users that we have. Our technicians can track what passwords they've had access to, so that if we wind up having a technician that leaves, we can go through an through automation of the Passportal site, we can actually change all the passwords that that tech had access to, and that removes any security risk that that tech might have.
Okay, so probably what we need to do is, just in case people aren't aware, we need to let them know that the idea behind, obviously, you know, short passwords are bad. The reason is obviously you can apply enough computing power to try and guess them. And if you manage to somehow get the encrypted file of the passwords, obviously it's much easier to hack or to crack when you have shorter passwords. The other thing that we mentioned there was the two-factor. So the idea is that to make things more secure, it's, you know, something you know, which is your password, and something you have, which is, you know, typically something off a key fob or a number. So again, think of an ATM where you have to put your card into the machine, something you have, and then you put in a PIN number to get access to your money. So again, that's typically, you know, what we're talking about. And you know, AuthAnvil is a product from security MVP Dana Epp that works really well in the small business environment, has for many years, and provides, you know, great levels of security and based around the two-factor authentication. So in this case, Jim, the product that you're talking about, I mean, has it been difficult to implement? I mean, typically, like I said, we have one password to log in as an administrator. I mean, is this a difficult thing to, A, implement and get up and running? And secondly, I mean, is it expensive?
No, it really isn't. Either both on cost and as far as implementation goes. With AuthAnvil, you do need to have a server that either you could utilize an E2 Amazon server and such. We have our own colo facility. So we've spun up a VM that is our AuthAnvil server. And so we set that up. We followed the instructions from AuthAnvil. They also have the ability to assist you in setting that up. There's a nominal cost on that, a couple hundred dollars if you need assistance with that. But we set it up so that we could have our two-factor authentication. And then we went ahead and we had set up, well, I would say we set that up second. We went ahead and evaluated the passportal.it first and discovered and found that that was the solution that we were looking for. So when we set up the Passportal IT, originally we didn't add the two-factor authentication because we didn't know if this was something that we really wanted to spend more time on. And then we played with that product, found that we did. We set up the AuthAnvil server, and then we configured in the Passportal IT. There's a simple configuration that basically connects the AuthAnvil server with their Passportal server. Another factor that we were happy with in the Passportal IT server is that we have our own passphrase. So we have a passphrase that's shared amongst us that also adds a third layer of encryption on the password stored. So if you don't have that passphrase, or if it's an incorrect passphrase, your passwords will show up incorrectly. They won't show properly. So we have our passphrase, which is shared. We also have the two-factor authentication server that authenticates the users to get in there. And it's been a very simple process. Once you set up the AuthAnvil server, you can either do key fobs or you can set it up. We have it all on our mobile devices, so that way when we have an AuthAnvil app that's available in iPhone and also available on the Android platform, and we can download the app and then we set it up and configure it, put our credentials and such into the app, then it goes back and communicates back with the server. You say get password, and then it gives you your second factor authentication password that also goes with you have a 4-digit PIN that you set up originally. So even if somebody were to look at your phone and be able to get your 8-digit AuthAnvil credentials, you would still have the 4-digit passphrase that went ahead of the passphrase that always is changing. So that enables it just adds an extra level of security, knowing that all of your passwords are protected. Then when we first implemented it, we went out and we tested with a few servers, because it is definitely kind of a concerning feeling that you have the ability to synchronize a password back to a server. You can synchronize all the passwords, you add them in, and then you tell them what you want in the passportal. So you can actually say, I'm just recording this password, or you can say, I do want to synchronize this password with AD, or you can go in and say, I want to verify this password. So the passportal server will actually look to the software that's installed on the server domain that you're communicating with, and it will actually check see if the password is actually what you have documented. So if somebody were to change, maybe you didn't want to synchronize a password with the client, and have it change, or have the ability to change it right out of the portal, then you could actually just check. So if something happened and that password changed, then you would know it. You actually get a red notification that says there is a problem with this password. It's not, the two passwords do not match that you have. Then the other way that we like to do is we like to have the we have a bit of a dual strategy there. We have a password that doesn't change that we have on the server that we just verify. So that's the password that the client has. If they want admin access to their server, then that's the password that we have put in an envelope and given to them. In case something happens, they decide they want to use a different company or anything, they have the ability to pull that password. They can lock us out. Or if something happens and they needed that password, that would give them immediate access to their network. But we typically take then the other password that we have assigned to our techs and us. We have that synchronizing back and forth with the server. And then if we haven't implemented this yet, but we're looking at probably by the time we get to September, after we're fully comfortable with everything, we're looking at having the passwords change monthly for our techs. So that way it generates its own passphrase and then syncs it back with the server. When we go into our passportal, we'll be able to see all the old passwords that it had. So every time we've changed a password, we'll be able to see those old passwords, but it will change them so that way if we have a tech that every tech will have to go in and view the password at the time that they're accessing that server, which we will then inside the system has a logging system. We could run reports, see what servers a technician has accessed during that time, and if there's an issue with that technician, then we'll be able to go back and say we want to change all these servers' passwords, and that will eliminate that tech from being able to get back inside. Plus, we can go back into Auth Anvil and we can actually disable their account there. So they're not going to be able to get into the pass portal. They're not going to be able to get into the customer's network, and they're not going to be able to access anything. So, and have any relevant knowledge of what the password configuration was. And due to the fact that the passwords then would be generated by a random program, the passwords are going to are would have the characteristics that we want to convey in a password without having a user generate them.
So what you're telling me, does that mean that Auth Anvil works with that pass portal? Do they work together?
Yes, they work together. The guys at Passportal told me that they know Dana, and they really like his product, and they were compelled to build something for themselves that they really liked.
Okay, so but could you use the pass portal as a standalone option?
You could, absolutely.
Okay. So it's interesting that it integrates with what Dana does. So, I mean, obviously you've implemented this, and you know you've got it up and working, and as you've mentioned, do you charge? You know, is that part of your standard offering, or is an extra charge for clients to have this enabled?
It's a part of our standard offering. I feel that it's if once we're in charged with their we have their keys to their castle, it's my duty to protect that password with all due diligence.
Okay. And is this something that you have let customers know that you have, or I mean, how, I mean, have you just implemented it, or I mean, have you let customers know that you're using this, obviously, this increased level of security?
Yes, we're and we since we've only started this since we began this process in October, and in January we implemented this. We've started to communicate with our customers. We have some aerospace customers and such, and they're for them they're fully aware of the security needs to keep their network secure due to the fact that they have government contracts and that their drawing files are need to be kept in a secure place according to their contracts they have with the people that are buying the product from them. So Boeing and Lockheed Martin have both been hacked by the Chinese. So the Boeing and Lockheed Martin are both implemented two-factor authentication to get to access any of their portals. So my aerospace clients are ahead of the game there. They understand the need and are we're looking at actually implementing the two-factor authentication for the with for their remote web access site and such. And Dana has a product for that as well.
Okay, so and what's the obviously you know what's the reaction of client? I mean, do you push it out to, this is available to all your clients?
Yes. And even if some of them don't even know, we've actually pushed this out to the we've actually implemented this because it because we just haven't communicated with them yet, but I think that's going to add a layer of that's going to put definitely add a big difference between our company and the other IT companies that are competing for business, because with us having a more secure access to their networks and having a process around that, then the customers a lot of times will implement password changes on a regular basis. So they know that they're changing the password. We go to meet with a client and say, well, when was the last time your when are your IT people changing their passwords, your administrative passwords? And I'll guarantee you that nobody's changing those passwords on a regular basis, which is kind of going against exactly what we've been trying to help them do, is by changing their own passwords, but the main passwords, the big heavy passwords, don't ever get changed.
So, I mean, this is only for, Active Directory log passwords, is that correct? Log into the
Yes.
AD? Right. Okay, so I mean, what's your, on a slight tangent, what's your strategy for, devices like routers and, print servers and things like that?
Oh, I should actually the only thing that will synchronize back and forth would be the passwords for the route for the Active Directory users. So if we have an account set up on the domain admins, we will synchronize with those accounts. But when it comes to the devices, the Passportal also has you can actually create your own devices. We've got a lot of Sonic Walls out there, so I created a group called Sonic Wall. And so when you we've added the username and password for the Sonic Walls, and actually a little note that gives a little bit of a description if need be, like maybe the IP address of the Sonic Wall in the network. Then when the when a tech goes in there, they can actually view that. That will also show up in the reports of things that they've accessed. So we can't automate the process of changing that password, but if we do lose a tech, we can go in and we can audit the access that he's had, and we can go in and change. We can go back and change even the devices, like the we can put in another big problem is, let's say the for example, the web host access to their website or their FTP access. If we're documenting all these passwords, where do we put these passwords? And then if we have them in our regular documentation site, then everybody's got access to that. They could just, there's it's it, we wouldn't have the ability to know that they had gone in there, because anybody can go in and into any of the in any security system. You can go into our system, and you can sit there and take a screenshot of different things. Well, the thing that makes it different on the Passportal is that if they go in and they have to click on show the password for each one of these devices, then it's logged, so that we have the ability to know which one is getting has been accessed. So if they even take screenshots, if you have a system like a SharePoint site set up and you have all your passwords in there, and you say, oh well, I know what they're doing, they can still take screenshots, email them to themselves, and have those passwords when they leave.
Okay, where are the passwords actually stored? Where do they actually live?
They live at the passportal.it site.
Right.
And each account that you set up in there has, you can add more passwords. Like I say, you can add Active Directory passwords, and then it will look to sync those. But you can add, but they're all separate, and you have to click on the, there's like a little magnifying glass. You have to click on that little magnifying glass to get the, to be able to view that password. And then you can copy it. There's a copy, so you can actually copy it and paste it in into something if you're accessing a server remotely or such.
So, I mean, obviously, you know, you're comfortable with the service and all that, but looking at it from an outsider's, aren't you leaving the keys of the castle on a third party like Passportal? Is there, I mean, do they have a TNO system or something that, you know, obviously they don't know the passwords? I mean, how do they, because, I mean, in theory, someone at Passportal has access to all the, everybody's passwords, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. You could definitely look at it from that perspective, but we have our we have our internal password that's shared with us, and that passphrase is a part of our key. So you can't if you had the wrong key in your cache, because typically it winds up taking your key, it puts it into a cookie, and then when you go to the site, it can store that cookie so that you don't have to keep putting that passphrase in. But when you look at the when we originally set this up, that was one of my big questions, was if we've got the passwords, then how can Passportal not have access to the passwords? But it's an encryption algorithm that they use with our passphrase that basically, with our passphrase, unlocks the ability to be able to see the password.
Okay, so you've got, yeah, so basically you've got a key that allows only you to view the passwords on the Passportal.
Correct.
So in theory, they don't. If they were to look at the passwords, they would just see gibberish or whatever, because they haven't got the front part of the key. Or would they actually be able to see the plain text? Is the password the key plus text, or does the key just allow you to unencrypt and view the password?
The passphrase allows you to. It basically unencrypts the password. And it's kind of funny, because when we originally set this up, I did a trial for 30 days. And then this was back in October. And then in November, I went on vacation. And in December, I came back and we went through a few things. And they said, well, you know what, we'll just set you up with a new 30-day trial. So we did that. But when I went to go look at my passwords, none of the passwords were correct. And I was very concerned, because I was going, if this is going to work, this is where we're going to put our passwords. So what happened was that my cookies had stored the old passphrase, and we had changed the passphrase to something else, a much deeper passphrase. So when I was looking at the passwords, and they were gibberish in the Passportal. So that actually gave me a bit of confidence in the fact that if I can't see it, and we had gone back and forth because they couldn't figure out exactly why we're having this problem. And then we realized, this was probably because I had already set this up with the same user account and a different passphrase, and that's why none of the passwords were readable. They were actually funny characters, even.
But you're saying, again, just for clarification, you're saying to me that your key is stored as a cookie? I mean, obviously you put in the first time to look at your passwords, but then are you saying that it's stored on your local machine somehow, that key?
It's Yeah, it's somehow associated with, and basically when we went through this process, we had to delete all of our history and our cookies out of the mix, because somehow once your passphrase is associated with the Passportal site, then the two, then you don't need to put your passphrase that you have each time in. Then you're only required to put your password in, and then after you put your password, your username and your password in, then you get your two-factor authentication prompt, and then you have to put your Authenval credentials in.
But to me, again, I mean, obviously there's two-factor and there's all this other stuff, but it sort of rings a bit of a concern to me that they're storing some password or key locally on a machine.
Yeah, I would say, and I thought about that too, but there's just, I don't see any way that somebody can associate our passphrase with the other factors into the Passportal.
No, I hear what you're saying, but I think the vulnerability would lie in a machine that, has a, so you've used that and it's somehow storing the key locally. Now, the question is obviously, how is it storing that key? It could be using, AES 256-bit encryption, or, is it storing it in a, plain text in a cookie? And again, it's not the complete keys to the castle, but it will be interesting to understand from Passportal. How they are actually storing that local. And again, if it's a cookie, again, you'd have to be think that on a local machine, that is something that could be retrieved. Obviously, it's a lot of work, but again, I think that it would be interesting to see exactly how they go about storing. And I understand that, as we talk about, security is a balance between, we've got a convenience thing here as well. But yeah, to me, looking at it from the outside, you think, well, why do they really need to go about doing that? And doesn't that create, a slight vulnerability perhaps?
Right. I'm going to say that does bring up a bit of a question there, because that is how they're definitely passing the passphrase back through. But it's I think the combination is a similar, the three parts that go through to ensure that you can log in
Oh, sure. I mean,
are definitely you can't get in and see anything with all three. And their big thing is that they don't, I can say from what they told me, is their big thing is that they don't want to know what that other passphrase is that basically allows you to be able to see your keys, because then that would make them have the ability to see your keys, your light, your
Yeah, obviously. I mean, I see why it's done for convenience, and I understand that. But again, it's always a bit of a concern as to why you would be storing any sort of password, or any sort of key locally. I mean, and they could be doing it correctly. They could be using, like I said, AES 256-bit encryption. I mean, that to me would be the interesting thing. Anything that ends up on the local machine, you'd be saying, okay, I understand that there are all these hoops that I've got to jump over, and the chance is very small. But
Right.
can you tell me exactly how you store that key on a remote system? Because obviously, again, to me, it doesn't necessarily mean that the security is bad, but it indicates to me how they go about thinking about security. So, if they implement it by just doing an OR with 255 or something, just flipping the bits, that's not really secure. But if they
Right.
use AES to encrypt anything local, okay, I've got a lot more confidence in that. So I think it's an indication again of potentially how they think about their security. So nothing wrong with it, but I think to me, looking at it from the outside, that would be something I'd be very interested to
Right.
understand as well. So the other one that I don't know if you've heard of or had a look at, one of the ones that I am very very positive on is a product called LastPass. Have you heard of a product called LastPass?
Yes.
They have an enterprise solution which does, a very similar idea, and again allows you to have, a single repository and have multi-employees, and you can retire employees and do all that sort of stuff. And obviously, it's a fairly small price up front, and you can use two-factor authentication with something like Google Authenticator, which is a free download basically. The thing I like about LastPass is that it is basically a trust no one system. So LastPass have no idea of what the passwords are. They're all encrypted locally and handled, and then that's synced up to the LastPass server, which then allows access. So again, another similar product. Don't know how well it integrates with some of the other stuff, but that is another option out there. Did you look at any other options besides this Passport? Were there any others that you considered out there?
I did, and I did look at Dana Epps. He has a similar product to this. I just felt that this product was a little more, gave us some options that we could access more devices via mobile devices and such, because a lot of times we're out in the field and that type of thing. So I did look at Dana's, and in some ways, I think Dana's product has some other features that are compelling as well. But we did decide on on Passportal.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's good feedback. Obviously, people have questions about that product. We can obviously give them your contact details, towards the end of the podcast there. But again, another one to look at, which I'm particularly keen on, is the LastPass product. And again,
Right.
it's a matter of a similar sort of concept, but managing these passwords is becoming quite difficult, and having the two-factor, and especially when you have employee turnover and you've got to retire, employee access and things like that, it becomes a critical factor these days in doing, being diligent, especially when companies are becoming more and more security conscious. So I think, and that's an important feedback. I think that the generally, how most of these hacks happen is again through poor passwords and that sort of thing. Do you do any work with customers to, train them, to encourage them, to help them understand why, their passwords need to be secure?
Oh, absolutely. And we have some we have a product that we've been using for quite a few years, and we have actually pushed a lot of our pushed it out to a lot of customers. But it was a real simple program that has the name has for some reason eluded me. But let's see if it's but what it does is, and for similar reasons, if you actually have everything on your machine and you have one standard strong password that you can actually then you can remember one password. One password is kind of like the Lord of the Rings, one password to rule them all, I guess. And but that way you have the ability to it's oh, there it is. Sign up shield, which came out with a lot of those U3 drives that came out back about 6, 7 years ago. And the nice thing we've enjoyed with that is the fact that it and helped our customers understand is that it helped them manage their passwords for all the different online banking, all the different things that they had, and it stored it in a secure AES 256-bit encrypted format. But they could actually go to websites, store their passwords. It would make logging in a breeze, and then if there was a password change, it would see that there was a password change and request that you save that password. When it was with it running, and then you could have that database running against a bunch of different machines, devices. So you could have a computer at your home, a computer at your office. You could have a thumb drive with that all on there, and it was encrypted and such.
Okay, so again, I think that, you know, that it's one of the things that you know, is something that I suppose is the responsibility of many IT people, is to make sure that friends, family, and customers do appreciate that, you know, the passwords are the keys to the castle. And unfortunately, they're becoming relatively easy to recover. You know, I've lost my password, send me an email. And again, it's a matter of making sure they're secure, and there's plenty of technology out there to do that, but unfortunately I think that it's getting more difficult rather than easier, simply because, you know, there's so many systems with so many disparate passwords. And one of the challenges, obviously, with the cloud computing is there isn't generally a single identity that people can use. I mean, there's obviously a current move towards, you know, logging in with your Facebook login with Gmail, logging in with Twitter, so again, there's a bit of an identity struggle out there to come up with a single, you know, system that will make it easier for users. So until we sort of see something like that, we're obviously still going to see lots and lots of compromises. But importantly, there are solutions that you can implement to, you know, for your customers to achieve that. So, I mean, in the time period that you've had it running, you know, it's run well, wasn't difficult to set up. You know, it was worth the investment.
Absolutely. And I did come across, I just double checked, but I do recall it had, it's data, all data is encrypted via multi-hash encryption technology. So they're running AES-256, SHA-256, and utilizing two remote hashes is what they're doing with that.
Okay. So again, I think that's you know, the important thing is that a lot of this security stuff, you know, and that's why I've got confidence, someone like Dana, that he, you know, knows what he's talking about, goes into it, understands it. I think that, you know, fear mongering and security is very easy to sell. And again, you know, it may end up not being particularly secure once you know, dig down and analyze it. So it makes it, again, very hard for a consumer and a lot of people selling the products to actually understand, you know, what is secure. And I think that, you know, if you ever have a question, then, you know, you need to put your hand up and ask somebody who's a little bit more experienced in that, because, you know, it only takes one breach to really end up with egg on your face.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, moving forward, do you see that, you know, this is a system that will go everywhere that you go with clients? Is it something that's, you know, standard with all your clients and going forward? And the next question I've got then is, in the world that we address today, where we're looking at, you know, logins to Gmail, Office 365, Amazon services, can Passportal handle that sort of thing as well in its scope?
Well, I'm going to say, for example, Dana has the one single, I think it's called single sign-on, with his AuthAnvil. And so what you can do is you can actually integrate that with your Office 365 so that you will be able to have two-factor authentication with any Office 365 as well as a bunch of other sites as well. So I think they're adding, I think the two-factor authentication is the, honestly, I think that's the key to any of the security systems that are out there. So if you can get two-factor authentication going with Office 365, with Google Apps, with Amazon services, then I think you're going to have a successful security. I don't think single passwords have the resilience with all the hacking methods that they have to be able to stand up to the hackers.
I think that again, you know, there's a best practice that will, again, you can't eliminate the threat totally, but obviously you can reduce it significantly. So, I mean, the general thing is, as you've mentioned initially, was long passwords, you know, more than 14 characters, and people, oh, how do I remember that? But the length is more important than the complexity generally. So that means that you could have, you know, a password that is, you know, my name is Fred, and then you could have 15, 16, 17 full stops at the end. When someone tries a password, it doesn't generally tell them that it was incorrect length. It just tells them it was incorrect. So, again, you can use a technique like that, just padding it with common characters to make it longer generally than 14 characters, and that does increase the complexity. The second thing, obviously, is to use something that easy to remember. So, again, a phrase. So you can use a passphrase. So something along the lines of, you know, my cat's name is Mary or something like that, or my birthday is on this day, or things like that will obviously make it a bit easier for people to remember. And obviously implement the two-factor authentication, and even for simple things like Gmail and Outlook, they all now support two-factor authentication. Facebook as well does have two-factor authentication. So the advice would be, not only inside a business but also in your private accounts, you need to enable two-factor, and generally it is, you know, for the consumer, it is generally free. A little bit complex to set up, but from a reseller's point of view, there's an opportunity to go in and explain to your customer the benefits of two-factor authentication, and then help them set it up not only on their business accounts but on their home accounts as well. So I would see that you're certainly taking that opportunity, and it's obviously going to give you that differentiation from other resellers out there going forward.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're approaching you know, the end of our time. So what I'll do is I'll get Jim just to give us a bit of a summary and a bit of a quick wrap up of, you know, what we've done, what he's talked about with security and the products that he's mentioned and why they're key to his business. And then we'll obviously to finish off, we'll just get him to provide everybody with some contact details about how you can get in touch with him if you have any further questions about what we've talked today. So Jim, why don't you give us a bit of a wrap up of what we've talked about?
Well, password length, security, and two-factor authentication are the primary things that we discussed. You can go to a website, grc.com.
Oh yeah, Gibson. / Yeah. Steve Gibson stuff. Yeah, always very good.
Haystack. .html, and then you can actually compare your passwords there so that you can throw in some shorter passwords, and it will show you what they estimate the time to hack that password would be. So definitely longer passwords, and, you know, help your customers out. Passphrases with numbers. Pretty much everybody's got the fact that people are doing a capital letter and then seven lowercase letters and then four numbers. So that a lot of the hackers are the hashes that they're using to hack are looking for those types of things. So make it long, make it kind of unique. And that will enable your customers to stay safe. Also, whether you whatever you're doing with passwords, your security, the security of your customers, and how a breach of security could affect your business. And that's really where we started going with this. And we will probably not be finished with our journey in trying to make the processes to secure ourselves and our customers, because things do change. But but I do feel very confident that we're making a we're making a good effort, and I think where your payoff in that is going to be that the customers will see that you have something that's unique from your competitors, and when you're able to show that, then a lot of times you're going to wind up being able to differentiate yourselves.
Cool. All right. So how can the people get in contact with you if they have any further questions?
My email address is jim@onsite-tech.com.
Easy. Excellent. Well, the last thing I'll leave people to think about is the unfortunate rule in security is that if you are protecting systems, you need to protect against every single vulnerability and every single threat. Unfortunately, the people that are trying to get into the systems only need to find one hole. So the odds are certainly stacked against you when it comes to security, and anything that makes it easier to manage and more secure has got to be a plus. The tools are out there. It's a matter of, you know, spending a bit of time and understanding them. And again, you know, people like Jim are obviously on call or available, you know, if you have any questions that about the route that he's taken. So I'll take this opportunity to thank Jim on behalf of all today's listeners for his time. So thanks for that, Jim.
Thanks.
Excellent. All right. Well, I thank everybody for listening to this episode of the CIOps Need to Know podcast. Thanks very much for listening. This episode was brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/podcast and use the coupon code CIAOps. To provide feedback on this podcast, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.